Running your own business means being ready for anything. And with the local bank that cares about local businesses, you will be. At Gulf Coast Bank & Trust, keeping your business accounts organized is a breeze with all the digital tools, convenience, and security you need, where, when, and how you need them. Get the most bank for your buck and your business. Visit gulfbank.com and let's make it happen. This is what you're looking for. Equal housing and equal opportunity lender. Member FDIC.
Leftovers. Or the DMV.
Number 97.
Or house cleaning. Or
Chumba Casino always brings the fun. Play over 100 different games online for free from anywhere. You could redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. Live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. On the program, I have Tanya Moore. Tanya is a professional bodybuilder, actress, entrepreneur, personal trainer, life coach, and she's also a Crohn's disease survivor. She has appeared in television shows such as Sabrina the Teenage Witch and Wipeout, and also for commercials for companies such as GoDaddy.com. On the program, we discuss her upbringing, also her introduction to bodybuilding. Also, we talk about mental health, and of course, we discuss her fight with Crohn's disease. Tanya is coming up after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Robinson Show.
Set summer in motion with the most electrifying Honda vehicles yet. Like the CR-V and Accord, with available hybrid powertrains designed to deliver more thrilling performance and more innovative tech. Summer's here. Make every adventure more electrifying with Honda. For a limited time, well-qualified buyers can get a 3.9% APR on a 2023 Honda Accord Hybrid or 2023 CR-V Hybrid.
For more details, contact your Louisiana Honda dealer today.
See dealer for financing details.
Leftovers. Or the DMV.
Number 97.
Or house cleaning. Or Chumba Casino always brings the fun. Play over 100 different games online for free from anywhere. You could redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. Live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Leftovers or the DMV
number 97
or house cleaning
or
Chumba Casino always brings the fun. Play over 100 different games online for free from anywhere. You could redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. Live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With our current situation, whatever that is, it can be your health and fitness goals, it could be financial, it can be relationship-wise, just things, your job, or whatever it is, usually the change happens in a moment when we're so fed up and we're frustrated and we're like saying, like, you know what, that's it, I am fed up, I'm not living like this anymore, I'm not looking like this anymore, I am going to make a change. And that's the kind of change that happens in a moment. And sometimes, maybe we go about goals and we say, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And you kind of half-step it and you just kind of go about it light-footedly, right? You know, is that a word? Is that a term? So you don't go at it wholeheartedly. And that is because you're not fed up enough. It has not become a standard. You have to raise your standard.
Indeed, you have to raise your standard. Welcome back to the program, everybody. That audio is courtesy of Tanya Moore's official YouTube channel, where she's talking about change happening in the moment, and you just have to be fed up, and you have to know the standard, and you just have to have that moment where you just fed up, as she said so eloquently. And to talk more just about not just having standards, she had standards in the world of bodybuilding and fitness, and also having her standards when it comes to being a personal trainer and also taking care of her health. Let's welcome her to the program. She's the owner of Tanya Moore Fitness and also doing some amazing things, not just in the fitness world, but also in the world in terms of dealing with the autoimmune condition, which we'll get to more of in the interview. Let's welcome her to the program, Tanya Moore. Hey, Tanya, welcome to the program.
Hello there. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. So let's get right to it. Every story has a beginning. Where did you grow up and what was your upbringing like?
So I am born and raised in the LBC. I did go to, so Snoop Dogg did go to my school at Long Beach, Jordan. Everybody knows him from Pauly, but he went from Jordan to Pauly. But, yep, I grew up in Long Beach, so I'm born and raised here.
I want to stay just with Long Beach for a moment, or the LBC, as Snoop would call it. When his rap career was just taking off, did you know that he would become a big superstar? Did it surprise you, or were you like, oh, wow? I mean, I knew he was talented, but not like this.
Actually, not really. I mean, you know, the funniest thing is that I really discovered that he actually went to my school. So we used to have like little rap sessions, and they used to during lunchtime, and they called or ragging on everybody, like bagging on everybody, like, you know, oh, your mama this, or, you know, like the jokes and stuff. So there used to be a lot of that going on. So he might have been in that group, you know, but I wasn't like friends with him. I just discovered later that, you know, he's at my school and his picture's in my yearbook. So, but yeah, it's kind of interesting to find, you know, it was interesting to find that out. I only discovered that because I wanted to find what his true name was, and he had different names, I guess.
I want to stay just with Long Beach for a moment. So we talked about Snoop Dogg, some other heavy hitters in the rap game from Long Beach. And of course, Snoop Dogg was a part of a group called 213, which was him and Warren G and Nate Dogg. Did you have an opportunity to maybe run into Warren G or Nate Dogg before Nate passed?
I didn't get a chance to run into any of those guys. No, I didn't, you know. But, yeah, you know, some of my friends did, like Lionel Brown, you know, like he knows them. They used to play ball together, you know. So, yeah. Lionel Brown's also IFBB Pro, but, like, yeah, so he did, but I didn't.
So definitely when you think of course, Long Beach is where you're born and raised, and, of course, Southern California, Los Angeles, San Diego. I know bodybuilding is really a part of the culture that makes up not just California, but Southern California as a whole. And what was your introduction like to the sport?
So into the sport, let's see. Actually, so in high school, I was a dancer. So actually, dance was kind of like my first love. So I took modern jazz ballet. And then after I graduated out of high school, you know, there was that little break of like just lawlessness of like, you know, I worked and hung out with friends and partied. And then I decided to join the gym. And I joined Gold's Gym in Long Beach. And only because one of the security guards that used to work in my building kept, you know, nudging me to, you know, check out the gym. So I finally did, and I liked it. And actually the owners kind of took me under their wing because they saw that I had potential. So they wanted to kind of guide me through. And at that time, I actually ended up meeting, which is now my ex-husband, but I met him in the gym. And he's the one that kind of guided me through bodybuilding.
Wow, that was amazing. So as you said, dance was your first love. And I want to stay just kind of like with, before you transition over to bodybuilding, with your background in dance, did that help you with a lot of the routines when you were getting ready to get on stage?
I would say yes, definitely. Dance is a big, you know, grassroots. It's an attribute to my stage and my presentation, and also not being so stage fright, you know, because we did performances and shows and stuff like that. Not to mention the hours of practice after school and things like that that were dedicated to the performances and you know, putting on shows. So that's kind of where I got that already, you know, the stage presentation already instilled in me through dance. And then of course, body awareness, you know, you gotta have great body awareness and, you know, being on as a bodybuilder too, you know, so, and then being on stage. So yeah, so definitely it plays a big, huge role.
Rightfully so. And so you mentioned about having kind of like that period where nothing was going on and you needed something to do, and you made your way to the Gold's Gym in Long Beach. Do you remember the first time that you walked in there? Was it like, were you kind of overwhelmed? Were you in a state of shock, or were you like, well, yeah, this is where I need to be?
I wouldn't say I was really not overwhelmed. I think I was just in a different phase, because it's not actually the first time being in the gym. My first gym actually that I've ever joined was, I wouldn't say a Holiday Health Spa. If anybody knows about Holiday Health Spa, that's Holiday Health Spa turned into Valleys, but Holiday Health Spa was back then, it had, there was no co-ed. It was women's section and men's section. So back in those days, I still really didn't know what I was doing. I just, you know, did some cardio and they had ballet bars. So I used the ballet bars and just, you know, it was just, I didn't know exactly as far as a regimen per se working out. But then stepping into Gold's Gym Long Beach, it was definitely different than my first visit, you know, my first membership of a gym, which was Holiday Health Spa. Very different, because it was actually a gym with weights the other gym had weights too, but it was just a different atmosphere. And by that time I've already seen, like, you know, females with muscle watching American Gladiators and things like that. So I kind of gotten a different view of what the gym is about at that time. And I was 20 years old at the time. I was about 20, turning 21.
Oh, wow. Definitely that set the stage for what you would embark on with a very lengthy career. And speaking of bodybuilding, do you remember your first competition and where was that?
My first competition was the Amateur Grand Prix. And that was in, I think the shows were in Culver City. So it was a John Lindsay show, muscle contest. You know, John Lindsay's been, on the map for years. And John Lindsay show was my first show, and it was the Amateur Grand Prix.
Do you remember what place you took and what was the preparation like for your first competition?
I would say, so I think I got second. Actually, there was only two people in my class, so at that time I think I only got second. I have to look back at my track record. I have to pull that up. It's been so long, I don't even remember all my placings. Back then there was no other category. It was only bodybuilding. So, it was very different back then, totally different era. Cause you know, like I said, there's no other category at all, just bodybuilding. And my preparation was, it was still a learning experience, cause I would research, and also back then we didn't have internet to do research. All we had was magazines and to go by that, and then read other, you know, articles from other athletes and things like that, and then just finding doing research on food and things, you know, and diet, and it was really just starting to be a stab in the dark at first, just learning my way through.
Definitely sounds like it was a trial and error thing, but you definitely made your way into the world and definitely competing in that competition. And as the years went by, I'm looking at some of your history, your contest history, and certainly you definitely put together some results. I want to talk now just about the training for competitions. When you were competing, how often did you train for competitions? Like, how many hours and days a week did you devote to training for competitions?
For competitions, probably, you know, it just depended on probably different shows. In my amateur years, you know, we spent more time in the gym because at the time, you know, it was me and my husband, you know, then we got married and, 2 years after we met, we got married. And then, so he pretty much was my coach all throughout until we separated and that whole nine. But so it would be me and sometimes it would be other people that would train with us. So we'd kind of be in the gym for, you know, quite a, you know, few hours. But the time spent would be at least, you know, like being a good hour of weightlifting, at least, you know, maybe hour and a half. And then plugged in would be cardio on the days, you know, where I needed to add cardio. And cardio just differentiated depending on where I was, my starting point was from my off season. So I've had some times during my amateur years where I've gained probably a little bit too much fluff in the off season. And so then that's much more you got to lose during contest time, which means at that time I thought more cardio. If I would know what I know now, I would do it different. But like back then, all we were told to, you know, you got to do cardio, an hour of cardio, 2 hours of cardio. I've had shows where I've done 3 hours of cardio, killing myself, you know, and plus weight training and then all the intricacies of detail like calves and things like that. So quite a bit of time is spent in the gym.
I want to stay just with cardio for a moment. Bodybuilding is a specs built on weight training and building up your strength. But if somebody that's listening to this that's probably saying, what does cardio have to do with the sport? Can you explain to the listeners what role does cardio play in bodybuilding?
Well, definitely cardio is meant for, you know, mobilizing, helping to mobilize the fat, burning the calories, you know, getting your heart rate up, you know. And then there's the slow, steady state cardio. But from back then, you know, like in my early 90s, you know, until now, like I want to say in the last between 10 to 15 years, there's been so much more information and research where, you know, actually the type like HIIT training type of cardio is more effective than doing hours on end cardio and things like that. So that's where if I knew what I knew now, I would have implemented the stuff now back then. Instead of killing myself for 3 hours, I could have short tracked it and power punched it a little bit better by incorporating HIIT, but we didn't know about that kind of training back then. But definitely it's to help, you know, at least get your heart rate up and help to burn that calories. And then you got your workouts for building the muscle and maintaining muscle.
You mentioned about something called HIIT. Can you explain
Yes.
to the listeners what HIIT stands for and what it consists of?
So HIIT is high intensity interval training. So it's a form of basically intervaling your workouts. And there's various ways to do that. You can do that through even just weight training resistance exercises, weight training exercises, but you're doing it at a shorter rest period, higher bursts, and very much more high intensity. So you can get a cardio effect while building muscle and weight training at the same time. So the old school ways of like you have to lift heavy just to put size on is not the only way. You know, like there's more than one way, so there's other ways to do it. And HIIT just does help, you know, get the calories burning, but more effectively in a short period of time without, you know, overtraining or sacrificing muscle.
Thank you for explaining that. And then you mentioned about when you would do your cardio to get ready for competitions, what would you do? Would you get on the treadmill or use an exercise bike? What were your methods of achieving your cardio?
So let's see, back then, I want to say in my earlier years, my cardio would be on the treadmill, steady state, walking, also we have the Stairmaster, we utilize the Stairmaster a lot, and then sometimes the bike, but usually it would be like the treadmill, bike, or Stairmaster. There's a step mill, and then there's the little step stairmaster thingy. I guess that's what it's called.
How often do you train now? How many hours and days a week do you devote to training now?
I know when we get to the topic of my Crohn's disease. So literally for the last 5 months, I've been bedridden. So I went from about 138, 140 down to 104 pounds. So I lost everything down to skin and bones. So it was actually the first day I've done something, which was some leg curls and leg extensions. And that was my first day doing something, since I've been sick.
We're definitely going to touch bases on the Crohn's in just a little bit, but I'm just glad that you're able to get moving and just try to be active and do something again. And I want to continue with the topic of training. What are your favorite body parts to train, and what are your least favorite body parts to train?
I would say definitely legs and butt is always like my favorite body parts to train. Shoulders would be the other one because, you know, shoulders are so important. And then, of course, the ones that are not my favorite to train are the ones that are, you know, we really got to pay attention to, which the judges, you know, keep an eye on, but mostly is your back and your hamstrings. So hammies weren't always my favorite. So, and it's usually the ones that are not your favorite, you really got to pay attention to the most, because, you know, you can tell when somebody, you know, has a favorite body part, because usually it outshines the rest. So for me, like, yeah, definitely, you know, back, you know, I had to really focus on back and hamstrings. So those, I feel like, were, you know, two of my things that weren't always my favorite.
How many hours would you devote to training those least favorite body parts, such as your back and your hamstrings?
I would say, so in my later years, what I began to incorporate, so, you know, like in my last shows in 2013, 2014, I began to incorporate what I call extra credit work. So I would do, you know, I'd have my workout regimen, like, you know, legs are usually split. So I have a quad day and a hamstring day. Then there's shoulders, you got back and chest, you know, so all my body parts are split. That way you can work in also the detail work. But what I call extra credit work is that I would maybe carve out, like, say 1 month, you know, I'm going to focus and do extra credit work on my shoulders. So every day I do something for shoulders. I have my dedicated shoulder workout day, but every day on all my other workout days, I'm doing something for shoulders, whether it's a 3 or 4 sets of side laterals, you know, shoulder press. So every day I would pick, you know, something to do to still work on shoulders. So I'm not killing them. I'm not, like, you know, not like my shoulder workout day, but I'm touching on them every single day. And then I'll start to taper off and, you know, go to, like, you know, every other day. And then I'll switch and pick another body part to focus on, which would be hamstrings. And I'll do hamstrings every single day. Like, so I'll have my dedicated hamstring day. And then I'll have all of my other workout days, I'll do something for hamstrings. So, and then the same thing, I would taper back off, and then I have another body part, and I would work on back, and then I work on my back detail, and same thing. So, and then the exercise would, the execution of the exercises would vary. So it's not going to be in the same fashion. I might do slow isolation, time under tension, extra squeezing, maybe high volume reps. So I switch it up and I alternate in the execution of how I do an exercise for each body part that I'm doing extra credit on.
I want to ask you now about your favorite body parts that you like to train. How many hours did you devote to that, such as you mentioned, with your legs and butt?
Legs sometimes would take longer. Same thing, though, as, like, I believe you can really get a really good workout, you know. I just learned later, we don't need to be hours upon hours in the gym. You can, like, have a very effective work out if you get in there and train with a purpose. And so maybe an hour, hour and a half. So if I'm doing like high volume, you know, like 250 reps, you know, I might pick two exercises for quads. It might be leg extensions and Smith machine squats. And literally, like, sometimes there's no real set, like, I won't say a goal, but, like, my rep range might be 15 reps, and then I'll add weight and 15 reps, and I'll add weight and 15 reps, and I'll just keep going till I break 15 reps, and then I go back down the stack. And next thing you know, like, I've done like 250 or 300 reps total in that exercise. And then I'll move on to a Smith machine squats, and then I'll do the same thing. And then that'll be a workout. So it might take an hour. It might take, an hour, hour and a half sometimes.
And then we touched on the topic of training, and now something that's very important to the sport of bodybuilding, probably the most important thing, the training is secondary, but what's primary is the diet. I want to ask you, what did your diet consist of during your time competing?
Yes, so diet definitely, I want to say diet really, really is the most important. If your diet's on point and you happen to, not have the best week of a workouts, and your aim is to be getting shredded, as long as you stay on point with the diet, things are still going to kind of keep going. So my diet, at that time competing for shows, it was the traditional bodybuilding, style type diet, eating every 3 hours, 2.5 to 3 hours, about 5 to 6 meals in a day. Usually I would be very consistent with the timing, as far as like the meal would be at the same time every single day. So if my meals start at 6 a.m., it's usually be with a shake until my coach would say no more shakes, and just only food. But usually my first meals would be a shake, and then I usually then go to ground turkey and rice, and then sometimes some grass-fed beef, and that's pretty much it. There's like, there was no, a lot of variation, same foods day in, day out, very redundant, robotic-like, I prep my food with my eyes closed, cooking my food and weighing out, measuring my food every time. So it's very, very redundant. And then until there's a cheat day or a refeed day, but like every 3 hours, like I said, shake, pretty much my meals would be ground turkey, white rice, and egg whites, eggs and egg whites.
Wow. I'm going to get more into, you mentioned about the diet, just kind of being on a strict regimen and just being robotic in just a moment. But you mentioned about shakes, and you said that you enjoyed those shakes so much that your coach got you off of them for a while. What shakes were these? Were these protein shakes, or were these shakes that you made at home and put your different specialties in there, like maybe food?
Right now I've more switched to plant-based type of protein powders, but at the time, just whey isolate. I would mix, you could whey isolate or plant-based protein powder, and I would combine it with, a glutamine and I'd bump it up with some liquid egg whites, and that's pretty much it. And every now and then I put a quarter cup of oatmeal. That would be, a quarter cup of oatmeal inside, and maybe a few strawberries or blueberries in the shake, and that's pretty much it. The only reason why we switch out, shakes, usually about maybe 6 weeks out or so, we just go to food, because you want your digest, you want your body to be working, so you just go to food at that time. And usually I only have one shake anyways, and I'm not always usually a food person in the morning, so shakes were more convenient. And then if I wasn't making a shake with, like, say, a protein powder, I would just literally drink my liquid egg whites, and then that would be a meal. That's it.
You mentioned about, you were saying that there wasn't much to your diet. you mentioned the things that you would eat were preparing for a competition or what you ate then, such as ground turkey, free-range beef, also the egg whites, and have your veggies. Did you ever have moments you was like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I could continue to follow this strict regimen of just being robotic and eating the same thing over and over again. Did you ever have moments like that?
I'm just like anybody else. I like food. I like, you know, the bad stuff. I like some Reese's peanut butter cups and things like that. So, you know, yeah, every now and then, you know, so the usually the outlet, you know, becomes watching the Food Channel. So, you know, I think I'm not the only bodybuilder that's done that, you know, so back in like the my early days, you know, cause we had a bicycle, for me to do my cardio in the morning. So literally I watched a lot of Food Network Channel or the Animal Planet. And, that's pretty much, you know, that's, I've gone living through food through the TV. So, or walking down the bread aisle in the grocery store and you just smell it. But yeah, there's definitely a, you know, I'm still human. I still like, you know, food and things like that. And yeah, there's been times where it was really where like hard, you know, there's no real social life for, you know, family events, you know, family gatherings, and you bring your own food and you can't eat what they're eating and things like that. So yeah, there's been hard times.
Well, certainly, I mean, as they say, if you sacrifice and have the discipline, that's certainly what you had to have in your respective sport, and certainly you've won many titles, and certainly it's definitely paid off. I mean, hey, it was a sacrifice, and you had the discipline, but it definitely paid off for you in the long run. And I've got to ask you now, what does your diet consist of now, even with your recent health challenges, what does your diet consist of now?
Right now it's just been really hard of just trying to navigate through what's going to be good for me to eat. I mean, cause still at the same time, I feel like I'm, you know, the whole time being bedridden, I literally watched every Gordon Ramsay shows, Hell's Kitchen, Kitchen Nightmares. I watched all the Food Channel stuff. I that's all I did was watch pretty much. I don't watch TV, but when I'm down, that's the only time I literally watch TV or shows and things like that. So, I even during that time just living because I couldn't really eat. So a lot of time was being afraid to eat or not eating food. So I suffered from malnutrition and things like that. So right now my journey back with food is going to be just more of doing more research as to what's all the more alkaline diet, plant-based diet, foods that are non-inflammatory. So things like that, you know, so I like food, you know, I like pizza and hamburgers and fries and all those things. I like all those things. So, you know, and I kind of went a little bit down that route a lot more since I'm not competing and since being retired and not having to prep for shows. So it gave me a little bit of that, you know, leeway of like, you know, not having to worry so much. Or be so regimented. So during that path, you know, then next thing you know, I got knocked down again with the Crohn's disease. So it's a reminder that actually I really can't eat that way because also those are inflammatory foods. So I have to really just do a lot of research, things that are more holistic. So that's going to be my route.
Touch more into Crohn's in just a little bit and how it's affected your life and what you're doing to make the changes to just stay healthy. And you mentioned about, of course, pizza, hamburgers, and french fries, and you also mentioned about Reese's peanut butter cups. But what were your favorite cheat meals after you finished the competition and you was like, okay, the competition's over with, I want to have a cheat meal. So what are your favorite cheat meals?
I would say definitely usually it's going to be, you know, depending like at that time, you know, how I looked, but like, I want to say, I think my last show, I had hamburger for, you know, after the show was over, went out to eat and we had hamburger, some fries, you know, and probably, I don't remember what I had to drink or anything like that. I might've had a cocktail. I don't remember. It's been so long. But usually, hamburger fries. In my earlier years, it was tradition. So my husband at the time, we used to have a place that we used to go to in Santa Monica, Mario's Pizza. So back then, we always used to go out to eat with the whole crew and go have pizza. In my professional, years, I not so much pizza, more like hamburgers, only just because the sodium in the pizza, and then unless you're staying on, diuretics, because you take diuretics, and I've suffered before from sodium rebound. Literally, the next day, I've gained, 20 pounds in one day due to sodium rebound. So, just got to be careful. But as a professional, can't go crazy, because a lot of times we have photo shoots lined up. So photo shoots are lined up, and so you got to still stay on point. So one cheat meal, and then it's right back to eating what you dieted on.
I want to talk now just about vitamins and supplements. Currently the lifestyle that you're a part of and the training, it's all about vitamins and supplements and making sure that you stay on top of your game and being healthy. So what vitamins and supplements did you take during your time competing?
I would say during my time competing, vitamins, all the, normal vitamins, like your multi-mineral vitamin, vitamin C, like I took all the regular, normal healthy vitamins. I wasn't really too big on the supplements, because I was never a big creatine fan or things like that. I want to say I do remember taking, the company Beverly International, I believe it was, they made these really big beef liver tabs. And I remember back then those things were huge and, taking those in, but that's also, that's also a health supplement. And then the protein shakes back then, like the egg whites, powder, protein shakes, everything was really disgusting back then. So we've really moved in advance where we are at now. But I wasn't really big. Maybe fat burners. I would say fat burners. I think I got more hung up on the fat burners probably, but not so much because I thought they were the miracle of burning fat per se. It was just that I use them for energy just to keep me going, because I'm the type of person that I'm a sleepy person, I guess. So I battle more of having energy and staying awake than as opposed to, sleeping. So I happen to be a sleepy person, I guess. So my ex-husband used to make jokes and say I should do sleep surveys and call me a professional sleeper and wondered how I built the physique that I did, because I like to sleep.
I got to ask you, how many of hours of sleep do you normally get?
Now it's very erratic. I don't have real sleep patterns just due to what's going on with my health. But even back then, I think I'm just I was always a really good, quick into REM sleep type of person. And I guess that's mainly it. Because there were times where I probably functioned on 4 hours of sleep, not much sleep at all. But, and that's just because I worked a job and wife, life, and then training and all that stuff. So during that time, I only probably functioned on 4 hours of sleep. But I think it's just inherited from my father, because my father was just that way. He'd sleep standing up. So I'm just that person. I could be knocked out on the floor sleeping. So.
All right, solid. And I want to just kind of get back to bodybuilding for a moment. I want to ask you about, we see the training and the discipline and all of the hard work and the stress that can come with this. But I want to ask you, in your opinion, what were the best things about bodybuilding?
The best things that are great about bodybuilding is, there's a lot of things that bleed into your life if you really grab hold and take it serious. there's the discipline, there's the mindset, you know, there's this thing like of not giving up and pushing through obstacles. You know, when you set a goal, when you're going, you know, you're going for it, it gives you a determination, you know. Like I said, you get in the gym, you train with a purpose, you have something that you're going after. But definitely, you know, it's the work ethic and the discipline, I say, that bleeds into other areas of your life. So that's going to show up as, you know, maybe as a person who's an employee who works for, you know, you have a job and, you know, it's an integrity thing that you take pride in. And I want to say what else, you know, definitely, I definitely want to say the discipline because, and the grit, you know, there's the grit that comes to it, you know, because it's a whole different, there's only probably 1% of us in this whole entire world that probably can do what we do. And usually they're the type A personality type of people, you know, and they don't give up. So it's definitely, and that's, I want to say bodybuilding is part of what saved my life as through my fight with Crohn's disease. So I think also we have a stubbornness to us a little bit, you know, like, you know, pushing through pain and things like that. So it can be a good and bad thing because sometimes we might be a little, you know, hard-headed too at the same time. So, you know, we think we can do something and then we need to listen a little more to reason and you know, and common sense, I guess.
Okay, there's definitely some wonderful traits that you brought up just about the discipline and the grit and just having that will and that desire to never give up. Not just you can take those traits and put it into athletics, but also, as you said, you could take those traits and use it as a stepping stone for life and certainly anything that you want to do, regardless of any area that you want to be in. And I've got to ask you now, in your opinion, what were the worst things about bodybuilding?
The worst things. Let me see. God, what can I say was the worst things? I mean, because I don't count the things of going what we go through as, I guess, worse or terrible, because I feel like it's usually the struggle and things that might be mistakes or that what we don't like is where we discover ourselves and make us stronger. So it's finding out what's going to work for us. So I don't know if I have any like worse traits other than if we want to talk the industry per se, then the industry for bodybuilding and the health and fitness industry is like the competitive side. I think it does create, there's a high end of narcissism, and if you want to go into maybe the personality side of, and some have maybe there's the mental issue, mental aspect, you know, like, you know, of maybe a different type of attitude or, you know, in an unhealthy way. And also I want to say, I don't think I so much experienced it too much, but I want to say there is a side effect in competitive bodybuilding or getting on stage, and there it is, the mental side, because I've learned that they become the most insecure people at the same time, if that makes sense.
That makes a whole lot of sense, and definitely that can bring up a lot of trouble. It can bring a lot of pressure. And again, it's a sport where it brings upon a lot of pressure, and also you're basically on an island, so definitely there's some good points that you touched on. I want to stay just kind of like with the worst parts about bodybuilding. You know, unfortunately, every competitor can't win a contest, and somewhere along the line is always going to be some politics. Do you ever feel that the sport was a little too political in terms of what athletes should have won the contest?
Yeah, I want to say probably there is that. It's, you know, it's one of those things that, like, when you come into this arena, there, you kind of got to have a foresight of knowing that that's part of the game. And I want to say that the bodybuilding industry and the fitness industry is kind of, there's a kind of messed up side to it. It's like Hollywood, but with muscle. That's it. Like Hollywood kind of messed up too, you know, like they have their same thing. There's the politics, there's the insecurities and all these things that happen with these movie stars and things like that. And it's about the same, like even in bodybuilding in our industry. So there can be favoritism, there's politics. And so you kind of got to come in with a little bit of a, you know, not so thin skin, and you know, understand that sometimes it's going to happen, and it's how we react to the situation and how we handle it. And you know, we, at the end of the day, we have to know that we are our own, at the end of the day, we are our own competition, you know. And as long as we don't relinquish on the fact that they judged us and put us gave us a number or a placing, that doesn't determine and define who we are. So as long as we can uphold a certain thing about us, knowing that they're not our identity on how they judge us. And that's where the problem is, and because most people don't have that mature mindset to adhere to that, and they're going to have problems with that. So that would be probably the bad side of bodybuilding, that happens, because there's a lot of teams and things like that. But in my beginning years, we didn't have any of that. It was just you showed up, and the proof is how you showed up on stage. And that's how we still have politics, but it wasn't as bad as it is now, because we didn't have teams like you got all these team intensity or whatever, all these, you know, like, and then that's where the favoritisms also began to be played. So yeah, totally two totally different eras, and a different way of how we dealt with, like, the way the politics and stuff was relinquished out and how it was played out. It had a different face back then as opposed to now. So, but it is not the fun part. But you got to come in with, you know, a little bit of thick skin and per se, and can't get butt hurt. You just got to come in and do your work, you know.
Yeah, that's not just in athletics, but just really just the game of life as a whole. You just have to be thin-skinned and just know that sometimes in life those things are going to happen. You just have to deal with it the best way you know how, and just know what you're getting yourself into in a particular situation. And thank you for touching basis on that. And I want to get now into an autoimmune condition that has affected a lot of people around the world, and that's Crohn's disease. And can you explain to the listeners, Tanya, what Crohn's disease is, and just how long have you had it?
So Crohn's disease is considered, it's a inflammatory bowel disease, IBD. So it affects the entire digestive system from the mouth all the way down to the anus. So everything's affected. There's a whole host of, you know, symptoms that come along with it. Things can happen, like, you know, malnutrition, you know, being in the bathroom 50 million times, you know, uncontrollable bowels, and, you know, hair, like bone deficiency, hair loss. I've dealt with dental issues, you know, I've had lesions on my skin, you know, it's a really awful disease. But like, even though we all kind of experience, there's a number of symptoms, but also all of us might go through it a little bit differently. So there's a lot of cases that are way worse than mine. So I did face emergency surgery, and so I don't have all of my large intestines. So it's been removed, and connected to my small intestines. So I've had to deal with that. So when I first got hit in 2009, I actually nearly died from it. So I went into emergency surgery, and my organs were shutting down. So my colon perforated and everything leaked out. So I was septic, and my organs were shutting down. And the crazy thing is when I got in there, they were surprised that, you know, after all the tests and they did, and then the doctors kept coming into my hospital room and asking me, like, what the heck, who are you and what are you made of? Because one, technically I should have been dead. And then, you know, but they said, you know, if I had waited one more day, I would have died, because they've drained about like 600 of cc's of pus out of my abdominal cavity. And so, you know, I was kind of like the little show in the hospital with all the disease doctors, and, you know, just wondering, like, you know, that, I guess that's where I kind of realized that how much bodybuilding and everything just kind of saved me, because they literally considered me like some superhero or something that survived what I showed up as. And I, you know, if I didn't, that could have canceled Christmas, you know? So, so it was really bad.
Wow, man. What an amazing story that is. And I'm just thankful that you made it out of that situation and you're alive and able to function and you're able to be on the program with us. And I wanted to stay just with Crohn's for a moment. What symptoms did you have to let you know that this is what you were battling and what you were diagnosed with?
I want to say, so 2008, actually, I was prepping for, I think I did Tampa. I did two shows, Tampa Pro, and I did the Europa, and I was going to do one more show. But during that prep, I was being coached by Iris Kyle, you know, 10-time Miss Olympia. So I've known her since 1993. So during that time, she was coaching me. And so I just knew, like, during my prep in 2008, like, you just know, like, at certain stages in your prep, you know, like 10 weeks out, 8 weeks out, like, you should be looking a certain way, or things should be happening at a certain time or certain fashion, you know, timely manner. So I was dealing with, like, you know, just issues. I thought I was feeling more like constipated, like something was like stuck in my stomach and I wasn't dropping exactly like I should. So I actually, at that time, I even told her, I'm like, I don't know, something's going on. I'm like, I feel like I'm not dropping the way I should, you know, and my stomach always felt bloated. So, I ended up going to get a colonics done. So I thought, maybe I just need to get some stuff out of me. And so I got a colonics done, and I believe the colonics exposed the Crohn's. So just like if you go to take your car in to get an oil change and they do a full-blown overhaul of the oil and the hoses and they flush everything out, if you have holes in the hoses, oil is packing the holes. So you might not know that you have, you know, bad hoses until they flush everything out. So that's kind of, I believe, what happened when I had the colonics done. So everything was impacting the ulcers that I had in my intestines, and it exposed it. And then I ended up, after my second show, because I was, like, still having issues after the Europa, and then I started having rectal bleeding. So after that, I started having that happening. I started kind of doing research and looking things up, and then it kind of went away. So then I just kind of preempted and wrote it off as, like, maybe it was just stress from the contest prep. Like, the contest prep is stressing me out, and sitting, riding the bike for cardio for so many, you know, hours, you know, on end or whatever. Probably caused rectal bleeding and all the whole nine. So I kind of wrote it off as that, as the symptoms kind of subsided. And then when January 2009 came, I started to prep for the New York Pro. And then the symptoms started coming back, the rectal bleeding and the bloating and the multi, you know, bowel movements and things like that. So then I started doing more research, and everything kept always pointing back to, like, Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, because I try to keep a wide spectrum of my research of what I was trying to find. I didn't want to just keep honing in on one thing, but it kept coming back to that. I had a client at the time. I had you know, on the low, I went to see her boss, who was a doctor, and got some blood work done and stool samples done just to see if I had parasites and things like that. And at that time, I explained it to him, everything that was going on. And I told him, I said, well, I think I have ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. And so at that time, he didn't really find anything. And I even asked my client, I said, what did your boss say? You know, and then she said, I know too much. So I laughed just because, you know, doctors usually don't know so much. And bodybuilders are like, we're experimenters on ourselves and we do all this research and we look things up. So sometimes we know more than doctors. And then I ended up getting health insurance. You know, I applied for health insurance in April. May 1st, it kicked in. And then as soon as the insurance kicked in, it seems like my health took a nosedive. Just like literally, I ended up with a staph infection, a cyst, fevers, like 30 times in the restroom, malnutrition, couldn't eat. I had ulcers in my mouth. I had lesions on my skin. So it was a whole host of things that all happened, like kind of all at once within that month.
Oh, wow. I hear a lot about Crohn's disease, and I know a little bit about it, but not much. But when you went into detail about the symptoms and what you went through, you first had your first bout of symptoms preparing for a competition, and then it went away for a minute, and then you prepared for another competition. The symptoms came back, and then, as you said, you had mouth ulcers and a rectal bleeding, and everything just happened all at once, and then that was what the diagnosis was. And, oh, man, my heart goes out to you, and that is definitely something that we see a lot about Crohn's disease on television, but I think a lot of people, even including myself, don't really know all of the nuances and the symptoms that causes this. And I want to stay just with Crohn's for a moment. What do you do in terms of like lab work and blood tests, and how often do you go to get your lab work done?
Definitely recently, I've had it done more frequently. Probably I want to say because of the whole pandemic, when the whole pandemic thing happened, I really didn't see my doctor too much. I had a procedure done in 2020 of February, and then March we went into lockdowns and so basically that was it. I haven't seen my doctor really since 2020, and then we had probably one telehealth like appointment, and that was pretty much it until just now recently of me getting hit with it. Now I've had, you know, multiple, you know, labs done, keeping an eye on my labs, you know, my blood work, because I'm anemic and things like that. And I was going to a more of a alternative facility before I came back to my actual GI doctor, because I've wanted to try and do something more alternative before going the drug route, you know. And it was just, I couldn't bear it anymore. So I had to go back the other way and get back on, you know, see my doctor and get back on the medications. So just to put a lid on the symptoms, so just so I could start functioning back in life. And then I can now, you know, incorporate the alternative and the natural healing and holistic care. But like the other way around would usually take longer if you want to go natural route. And, you know, natural healing takes a lot longer than drugs putting the lid on the symptoms. And, you know, so as long as you know that they're not the healer or the cure, you know, then you pull in the natural healing. So yeah, I definitely got to get them done. Plus the colonoscopies usually need to be done like every, you know, several years, a couple years. So my last one was in 2019 and I just had one. So the outcome, it didn't look too good. So
we definitely be up praying for you. You mentioned about natural healing and taking regular drugs. You mentioned that the holistic healing or the natural healing takes much longer, but it's definitely a worthy investment. What are some of the other things and other differences that you've noticed in terms from holistic healing as opposed to taking drugs?
I would say holistic healing, I do believe in it, and because the body, you know, is meant to heal itself. So for me, through my battle and my fight throughout all these years of Crohn's, I think I feel like it's just a reminder that I need to do better once I get out of the red zone. That means I need to do a better job of paying attention to my diet, of what I'm taking in and making better choices. Cause just like anybody else, you know, I've gone off track and eaten, you know, things that probably weren't beneficial for my condition. So for me, it's just a reminder, like, that just, it just means that I really have to do better. So natural healing just works on a cellular level. You know, it works at we want to get to the root cause and not just put a Band-Aid over symptoms, you know. So medications, drugs, the FDA, big pharma, you know, the Western medicine doctors, you know, the regular doctors that don't even touch on nutrition. They don't even know anything about nutrition. So really nutrition's the route part of the natural healing process. And then, you know, then herbs and things that are of the earth. And then they're going to just do more things on a cellular level. And when your body starts to heal itself and you're not now trying to heal just a condition, you're trying to create and achieve overall health. You might be healing things that you didn't even know that were there or might be coming up next down the road. So that's what healing is, with natural holistic ways, or just better approaches that aren't, you know, pushed through the FDA and big pharma, things like that. Because, you know, FDA owns the word cure. They never cured anything. So usually at a holistic, a natural healing, they can't even say that that's the healer and the cure, because FDA owns the word cure.
Wow, I never knew that. Thank you for sharing that information with us. That's so amazing. And if anybody is listening to this, you know, definitely make holistic healing definitely a part of your health journey, because it's very important. I think more people are paying attention to their bodies and finding out just what's going on with them. Definitely, I urge you to make it an investment in holistic healing. And you mentioned with Crohn's about flare-ups. Can you explain to the listeners what a flare-up is?
So that's just kind of our way of saying that we're back in the red zone. So just like, say, like cancer goes into remission and then it comes out of remission, you know, like you'll hear people that has dealt with cancer, they use those terms. So it's kind of the same thing. So Crohn's, you know, the our goal is to achieve remission, and remission is being symptom free. And not dealing with any of the symptoms, and also everything being in the clear, as far as, like, you know, a good, you know, colonoscopy, like the intestines should have a certain look to it. And so that's part of achieving remission, you know, because, like, for me, my last one that I just had was fully, like, inflamed and has ulcers all down the descending part of the large intestine down to the, like, the rectum area. So if you were to look at my pictures, you'll see all the ulcers throughout the intestines. So flare-up is just our way of saying that we've relapsed and we're back into the red zone and dealing with major, you know, debilitating symptoms again. So usually we're taken down by that. And then, you know, a lot of times, if people believe in the drug cycle, then we get on infusion treatments and all the medications, and we get into remission and we're symptom free. And like for me, that's kind of been the case also, because I end up coming off the medications and the infusion, the biologic medications. And then next thing you know, like about a year later, I'm back in a, you know, relapse. So I have to find a better balance through the food and other things, alternative routes, to keep me in remission. Once the drugs have helped me get me in remission, I need to use the alternative route to keep me in remission.
All right, definitely. So, and again, thank you so much for educating not only me, but just the listeners on Crohn's disease. I had a little bit of a knowledge on it, but with you explaining it, we all have a full detail of what this ailment or what this autoimmune condition is all about. You mentioned something about at the beginning stages where you felt like you were diagnosed with this ailment and doctors were telling you that you know too much. And you mentioned that about bodybuilders knowing their bodies in and out from head to toe. What is it about bodybuilders, in your opinion, Tanya, that they know a whole lot about their bodies and changes, whether it be, it could be a major injury or a minor injury?
I think because once you set the goal of, like, you're trying to achieve either a certain look, a lot of things become, you know, it is trial and error. You know, we are like our own canvas. So we're always looking for, even in our workouts, we're looking for ways to pull out detail through our workouts and things like that. So we become very in tune, and there becomes, like, I want to say there's probably an obsession into what it is that we're doing, obsession or passion, however you want to word it. That you know, it's an artwork, you know, and just like, you know, a painter taking to a canvas, you're looking at all the detail. And so you become in tune with the brush strokes and things that are going on and how everything feels. So it's a lot of being in tune with your body and connecting. And so, and understanding what there's a science behind everything too. So it's not just a lawless game. This is a precision game too. There's a science and this is a precision game. So, and it has to be, you know, very purposeful. So if you're taking it serious and, you know, otherwise, you know, there's the other people, the gym goers that just show up and really don't have a clue. And I even have clients I'm forever trying to, some, you know, it's like rhythm. Like, some people either got rhythm or some people don't. And some, you know, sometimes it's hard to teach people on how to be in tune and with every fabric and fiber, you know, inside, like, their muscles and things like that. So we do a lot of research. We look things up. And if something's working, then you want to stick with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if it is broke, then we got to find, you know, what's going to work and another route, you know, and how we can do something different to get the same result, you know, or the desired result that we're going after. So there is a lot of, you know, trial and error research and just, you know, becoming in tune with our bodies.
Thank you for that explanation right then. I just always admire that about the sport that you are involved in, and certainly paying attention to your bodies and making sure, like you said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If it is broke, you go out and fix those specific parts to try to make it better. It's definitely just crafting something and putting something together. And speaking of crafting and putting something together, mental health is something that's really been on the forefront for quite a while now. And certainly we talked about the best and the worst things about bodybuilding. And you mentioned one of the worst things is that with the politics, and you cannot be thin-skinned, and sometimes that can take a toll on mental health, and then currently what you have with the autoimmune condition that you're battling. I want to ask you, how do you keep your mental health in check?
So for me, because what keeps me in check with my mental health is because my identity is in Christ, Jesus Christ, my Lord. So God is my strength and my refuge, and I'm nothing, and I'm a weak, you know, humble person, you know, and I wouldn't be here without him. So really that's where everything goes to. So I point all my glory to God because I wouldn't be here without him. And every day I pray and I give him all the glory. So that's where really, truly, that's where everything comes from. So I that's my faith, you know, and when you know where your identity is, because my identity is child of God, then I don't worry about the world because I'm not of the world, and I'm not trying to be like the world and the rest of the world. So that's why I also kind of sidestep a little bit, especially my later years, and in these last years, my spiritual and my relationship's grown a lot closer, and I've learned a lot more. You know, I've spent actually the past, I want to say a year, about 2 years in Bible study and with my Bible study group and learning the Word. So really that's where my anchor is at. And otherwise, like, yeah, you know, I don't deserve to be here because I'm a sinner. So I wake up tomorrow. I cannot wake up tomorrow. It's not my choice. And so that's why I guess I don't fall into the identity or insecurities. I don't worry about what other people say because I really know that my life here on this earth is temporary. There's an eternal kingdom that I strive for. So really that's where my goal and purpose is right now. And that's why I don't fall into like what everybody else, you know, I guess I never had that with everybody, you know, people in the industry where they have those insecurity issues. Maybe in the beginning, I've gone through some wayward times, so I'm not perfect and I've always believed in God, but only just in my last, like I said, these last few years, it's been a different walk for me, but I've always still had that faith, you know. So I think that's why I haven't fallen into the mental aspect, and I've been able to help others through things that they've been going through and, you know, guide them or hold their hand or encourage them and inspire them. So I'm actually also known for just that. So that's where people also gravitate towards me. Besides my knowledge in bodybuilding and all the stuff that I have, I've had clients call me a walking encyclopedia just because they'll reach out to me and, you know, and not just clients, just people that I know in my circle or life. And, you know, they might have talked to me, you know, I might have touched base with them. We're friends and we lose track, you know, just like friends lose track. And then, and we can point right back and they'll touch base and like, hey, and if they'll have a question and we're just right back like we never left each other. So I think that's where people gravitate towards me because I have that side, the empathetic side to help people on the emotional, mental level.
Absolutely. And that, you know, mental health is definitely important, and certainly with a strong spiritual base, it makes things even better, as you said so eloquently. And again, thank you so much for touching bases on that. And I want to transition now to the fitness world and Tanya Moore Fitness. You've been involved in the coaching and the personal training world, as you said, being a motivator and an inspiration to your clients with your empathy and also with your encouraging words. Just tell everybody about Tanya Moore Fitness.
So Tanya Moore Fitness, you know, I consider me the brand as a total package, because you're not going to, if you come to me, you're not just going to get, you know, these strict orders of do this, this, and that. Although I'm going to instill, you know, certain things as if you're coming to me for goals. But usually there's the attached package of, you know, yes, more of the life coaching, you know. And I think that's where that aspect comes from, is Tanya Moore Fitness, because it's just not just physical fitness. You know, I'm encompassed with physical, I mean, spiritual fitness. You got mental fitness. You got financial fitness. So I kind of encompass a lot of little different areas that are part of me. And so I have little bits of different ways to either help somebody or relate to somebody. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's just, I feel like it's part of self-development and empowering people and helping people to, you know, love themselves and know that they shouldn't, you know, anchor to like other people's opinions and things like that. So that's where I try to just, especially also the females, because females end up with the insecurity or in bad relationships. I've been through the bad relationships. So sometimes I, You know, there's been times it's just relationship, you know, advice and things like that and helping them through that. So, Tony Moore Fitness is not just physical fitness. There's overall life fitness.
Right, that's awesome to hear, and certainly you're definitely making your mark. Like you said, it's just the total package on everything from the spiritual side to the physical side and the financial side as well. And also, you also have alkaline water. You mentioned right at the beginning of the interview about alkaline water. Can you tell everybody about what you're doing in the world of alkaline water?
So I came across, and you'll probably hear people like to like bash it, but like that goes for anything. You're always gonna have the yin and the yang. There's always gonna be the people that cheer something on and the ones that bash it. So that's with anything. But the Kangen Water, it's a company. It's out of Japan. They make these machines to ionize the water, and all it does is it just pulls out the bad impurities out of your tap water as it goes through the filters, and it gives you an alkaline hydrogen electricity charged water. So we are electric beings, and so mainly, although it's marketed as alkaline water, but ideally it's the hydrogen and the electricity aspect that actually sparks that our cells, because our cells actually adhere more to the hydrogen side of the water. Alkaline is, you'll see, it's such a big marketing thing out there with all the bottled water you see. So when it comes out of the machine, the property only lives for about 24 to 48 hours. So all the bottled water is the biggest consumer scam of all time, because bottled water that's labeled alkaline is not alkaline. It's chemically made alkaline, just like your tap water is made alkaline. So I came across this company and this water and investing in it and becoming a distributor of it back in 2013. Actually, probably before that, I came across the company a few times, but in 2013 is really when I invested in the machine for my health. And then through that, that's how I became a distributor in the company. But mainly I got it for my health, just for the fact that one of the doctors, I forget his name now, he's the one that kind of invented the thing that does the polyps out of a colonoscopy. So he's would see patients and their colonoscopy, you know, pictures were horrible, and he put them on an alkaline diet and then make them drink the water for like 3 months. So this is kind of where we're about, where my journey has to go right back to, you know. So he put them on an alkaline diet and then drink the water for like 3 months, and then he would recheck their intestines again, and a lot of times they would start healing itself. So it's just mainly just cutting out a lot of the things that are put out there by the food industry and just going back to nature and alkaline. And the water does help. It's the most highly antioxidant water to drink. So I only drink that water, and I have the machine in my house. And I've actually distributed out, where I take bottles to my clients and put my clients on the water too.
Wow, that is amazing what you're doing with the water, and certainly that alkaline water is very important. And you mentioned about all the great benefits that it has, and certainly you've been a blessing to your clients and helping them out tremendously. So kudos to you for educating your clients and educating all of us on alkaline water. And Tanya, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media, and if you have any websites, let the listeners know that as well.
So definitely you can, the easiest thing is Googling me, but you want to make sure you spell my name right. So it's TONIAMOORE, Tanya Moore. So if you Google that, you'll definitely find all my website. But then there's TanyaMooreFitness.com. My Instagram is Tanya Moore. My YouTube channel is Tanya Moore 1, the number 1. Those are pretty much where I'm going to be, you know, doing more content. I'm going to start going back to working on more content. But if you go to Tony Moore Fitness, I try to like keep everything, like a lot of the links there. You'll see like my notary work, my other links I'll be putting in there, my blogs. I'm going to start blogging and doing more stuff there. And also, like I said, my Instagram, Tony Moore, you'll see there's a link in there that has a multi-link where you'll see all my links and find everything that I do.
That's amazing. You definitely have your hands full, and definitely please check her out on social media as well as the website that she mentioned. Before I let you go, Tanya, you've had an interesting foray into the world of acting.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Leftovers. Or the DMV.
Number 97.
Or house cleaning. Or
Chumba Casino always brings the fun. Play over 100 different games online for free from anywhere. You could redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. Live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Leftovers. Or the DMV.
Number 97.
Or house cleaning. Or
Chumba Casino always brings the fun. Play over 100 different games online for free from anywhere. You could redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. Live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You were on an episode of a popular program called Sabrina the Teenage Witch with Melissa Joan Hart. Can you tell the listeners out there the name of the episode and what was your role in that show?
I think I filmed that right after I got my pro card in 2001. I got called. So John Lindsay is the one that pushed my name through to the agent. It was called Driving Mr. Goodman, I believe. And they still air the episode because I still get residual checks. It's not enough to buy a, I don't know what nowadays. It's not much. But, you know, I still get residual checks. That's how I know they still air it. It was also with Chyna, the wrestler. So she was the other actress in this episode. She played Mary Jo Ponder, and I played Olga Spelmanovich. So that was my role. And my role was to basically, you know, Melissa Joan Hart and Chyna's Mary Jo Ponder, they got into a fender bender, a little car accident. And so Melissa Joan Hart rear-ended Chyna. And so she decided to, you know, they took exchange phone numbers and they thought they were good to go. But then next thing you know, Melissa Joan Hart and her Sabrina got slapped with like a lawsuit from Mary Jo Ponder. And so the goal was for Sabrina to bust out Mary Jo Ponder that she wasn't really injured from a car accident. So she made a trip to the gym, and she magically waved her little magic fingers and the body transformed into the bodybuilder, which was my body. So her head, I was the body double and her head was on my body. And so that was the thing, was to egg her on into a little gym competition of lifting weights and bust her out to prove that she wasn't injured from a car accident. So that was the gist of the show, you know. But it's a good show to watch. It is on my YouTube channel. I've also been on, you know, TLC and Wipeout and Blackout and GoDaddy commercial I forgot which one it was. It was the Super Bowl GoDaddy commercial. I was in that with all the bodybuilders running to a window or something. Like Kali, what's his name? He was there. Was old Brad Rowe. A lot of us were all in the that commercial. So yeah, I've been on several things. Taco Bell.
You definitely developed a resume with being on those TV shows as well as those commercials. I want to stay just with the show Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Do you remember what that day of shooting was like, and how intense was it, you being a body double for Melissa Joan Hart for that episode?
Well, I'll tell you, so we got there, I had to be there. The call time was 6 a.m. in the morning, And it was actually, that was my first time doing something, being on set. So it was definitely great, but it was a fun experience. And probably not like what people think. So there was a lot of also sitting and waiting around until you're called to do your scene. So my scene was, I actually jacked up my shoulder on the set. So, because I had to be blue screen. So the blue screen was placed over my head, and we put a scarf around my neck because that was the cutting point for, you know, the blue screen. And so I had to wear this mask over my head. So being on set, we did several takes and me walking out, and I had to flex and I had to do all the motions and talk through the dialogue and of the scene, you know, just the same as Melissa Joan Hart would have to, because you got to have your jaw, you got to see his motion, right? So of your throat moving and things like that. So she wasn't nowhere around at all when I was doing my parts of the scene. So I just went in and did the take and, you know, stepped on the mark and then got on the incline press, and I was moving the weights. So just so you know, the weights were not real. They were fake weights. The only probably that had a little bit heaviness to it was the bar, but the weights that were on there were fake. All the weights were fake. And they make the clanging sound to add to the sound, you know, make it sound like it's real. And so it was when I had to re-rack the bar. And because I couldn't see, because of the mask, I missed the hook. So my right arm kind of went back and I hyperextended my shoulder just a little bit. So that's kind of what happened that day on the scene. But, you know, I just, you know, pushed through and we kept through, and, you know, they were very attentive. They, you know, to make sure I was okay. And I was like, you know, keep filming, show must go on. So we kept going, and then we finished the scene though, and that was me lifting the bar with one arm up in the air and placing it back down. Like I said, it was fake weight, so I didn't have to really lift too much weight. But it was fun. It was fun.
Sounds like a fun experience right then. I want to stay just with Melissa for a moment. You said that you didn't have an opportunity to work with her, but did you have an opportunity to maybe say hi to her briefly or shake her hand during that time?
When I auditioned, when I got called in for the audition, that's when we initially first met, because we had to measure up next to each other to make sure our heights and everything were about the same. So that's literally where we had to do. And then she did come in that day. I mean, just for a little time, but for majority of the time, because we were there from 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. filming, but it's not constant filming. She was off in other parts of the set. And then she did towards the end, at the end, came in after I did all of my stuff. And then after she did all of her stuff on the other side, then there was a part we had to re-meet up again. So like I said, we met out on the audition because we had to measure up. We had to stand, you know, like back to back up next to each other and see if our shoulders and height and everything matched. And then we had to coordinate with the clothing. And then on that filming day, towards the end, yeah, we met right back up again because we had to do the transition, I guess, where the screen where they did the digital, you know, trickery of her turning into me. So we had to go by the lockers and stand in place and mark the spot, and then she had to mark the spot, and I had to mark the spot, and then she had to wave her fingers, and then I, you know, like that. So yeah, we did meet back up again, but not for the whole day. So it's just like, I did my filming, she was off somewhere doing her filming, and then for that section of that part where she had to do her little magic fingers and turn in her body into my body, we had to make sure all the lines matched there for that transformation.
That's amazing how Hollywood works, and just with the industry, and as you mentioned, with the motions that you had to do. And then, of course, you mentioned meeting Melissa briefly at the audition, and you and her had to line up in terms of make sure you guys were the right height, and everything had to be detailed. That's amazing. And speaking of that episode, unfortunately, we lost China, gone way too soon. Did you have an opportunity to meet her?
We were best friends. So we were best friends for... we were like inseparable from, I want to say from 2002 to 2003, around there. So yeah, so I used to do some wrestling too. So that's how I got introduced into the wrestling world through Rob Van Dam. And, I used to go to his house and train his wife. So, and Rob Van Dam's the one that brought us all, you know, into wrestling. So I used to wrestle independently with UPW. We did some matches. UPW? Yeah. With Rick Bassman was the undevelopmental team, the company for WWE back then, or WWF back then, which is now WWE. So I've met, you know, best friends with China, Sean Waltman, you know, X-Pac as the, or 1-2-3 Kid. I've friends with, there's pictures of me and the Hardy Boys. I took my nephew backstage to the wrestling events, Big Show, The Rock, like Trish Stratus, like I've met all those guys because we did the little independent wrestling. So me and my husband at the time and his cousin, we were known as the Bronx Bombers, and I was the Neutron Bomb.
Wow, that's amazing right there. You certainly have had one heck of a life and a storied career thus far. I want to get back into your foray into professional wrestling in just a moment. I want to stay with China for a moment. I know she had her issues, and nobody's perfect, but I know she had her issues. Did you know some things were wrong during that time that you had with her?
Well, that's part of my life, I would definitely say, was the down phase of my life. As far as after I got my pro card, there was a hiatus between after getting my pro card in 2001. So from 2002 up until 2005, that's when I was dealing with marriage issues. Also at the same time, X-Pop, you know, Sean and China used to be at our house all the time, or if they weren't at her house, sometimes Sean was at her house and I was at China's house. So that was like that was the dark side of my life, the downside. And I didn't step foot inside the gym for like 5 years, and I didn't make my pro debut until 2006. So, so those were the dark times. I did an interview with A&E about China because, you know, the mother found me because I did her interview on the Bleacher Report, and the mom wanted to get some of the items that I had that were given to me by her, you know, her wrestling outfits and things like that that I have. So, yeah, I definitely know about all that because we were all kind of ingrained in all of it together. Just some parts were not, you know, some parts were just, you know, really bad and not that great. So nothing to write home and brag about. So those are like that. That's like the little dark part of my life. I guess I want to say that it's not really out there as much unless you find some of these interviews. And so I knew her manager after
after the funeral, because I went to the funeral or the memorial that, and I reached out and I found the manager, and the manager is the one that, like, you know, kind of kept in loops with me. So, yeah, I know about all that stuff. Yeah. Something that I don't know about, because we lost touch after, I want to say about 2003 or 2004, because I left my ex-husband, and after leaving him, like, it kind of, like, my life had to go in a whole different direction. So me and her, we definitely lost touch throughout all these years. And then a few years after, late, I want to say 2008 or 9, I ran back into her, like, one night at a nightclub, and she just went kind of like crazy, throwing bottles at the bartenders and stuff like that. So after that, no, I haven't really seen her. And then I found out that she had passed away, and it was, and the manager kind of told me the story, because he's the one that found her in her apartment.
My condolences to you on losing your friend, and certainly Chyna, may she rest in peace, and certainly somebody that left a lasting mark, not just in the professional wrestling world, but certainly she was just on her way and trying to get back on track, man. It's just so sad, but we definitely have the memories, and we'll definitely continue to cheer and watch her for the amazing work that she did. And I want to talk just now about your foray into professional wrestling. You mentioned about the connections that you had with the WWE, and you talked about the friendship you had with Chyna, and also knowing Sean Waltman, a.k.a. X-Pac and the 1-2-3 Kid, and also Rob Van Dam. I wanted to know, were you ever approached about a tryout with Vince McMahon, maybe going to Connecticut or going to the Performance Center and having a tryout for Vince's company?
Not so much with Vince's company. I want to say that at that time, back then, they were trying to bring back WOW, if you remember WOW or Women of Wrestling. So I was, at that time, I was going to audition or, you know, go for that. And I think, I don't remember what happened during that time, but I just remember going to one of the events, and that's what we were going to do. And then I think then they called off auditions, and what happened was, is they went under financially. So that kind of, that part didn't happen. But with Vince, no, not so much. And that really wasn't really my avenue or desire, because if you ever take a bump in the ring, your body's not meant to be taking bumps. So it's just not meant to be banged around inside a ring. And it's, you know, so that kind of wasn't, for me, was more bodybuilding. I was more like, I don't want to get jacked up and I don't want to be hurt. You know, like Chyna, when she was coming up, she broke her tailbone and things like that. So, you know, so it's a really rough sport, and it's really rough on the body. So your body's just not meant to be banged around like that. So I just remember the first time taking a bump in the ring, and I just remember feeling like one of those, the cartoon where you see the little cartoon that gets hit and the whole body just vibrates and you see their eyes go cross-eyed. So literally that's, you know, but once you keep doing it, you practice, you kind of get used to the feel. But at the same time, your body is just not meant to be banged and banged like that.
I've always had so much respect for professional wrestling, and especially with wrestlers and what they go through. And people always say, oh, they're just taking bumps. No, I've gone to a lot of wrestling matches in my day, and I tell you one thing, it is a science and it's an art to that. And certainly I tell people, don't never discredit professional wrestling. I mean, it's athletic. It's what you would call an athletic choreography. But, man, it's still much respect to those athletes, male and female. So
I was in agreement. It definitely is my words out of my mouth, because it's definitely choreography. It's a skill, precision choreography, just with, you know, a little extra heart to it. You know, it's not as graceful as, you know, dancing the waltz, but like you got to know each other, and you got to know each other's moves and how everybody moves. And so it's definitely choreography, and it's very precision. So the only thing that, you know, people like to, you know, bash it is because they think it's fake. the athleticism, the execution, the movements, like so all that you have to practice, you have to work at it. It's choreography, it's skill, it's precision. Is definitely that part's not fake. The only thing that's scripted is the storyline. Who's going to win and who's going to not win, or that's the part that's scripted. So if they want to like call something fake, then yeah, then just the outcomes and the storylines are, but the movements and everything that happens in that ring, you know, you if you mess up, you're jacked up.
Yeah, it's definitely no walk in the park, and man, certainly much respect to the people in the world of professional wrestling, and not to mention the travel. I mean, they're working, if not 365 days of the year, but they're working at least over 300 days a year. Definitely, as you said, perfecting their craft and taking a lot of bumps is definitely not an easy profession. And again, Tanya, thank you so much. And one more time, tell everybody where they can find you on social media. And if you have a website, let them know that as well.
Well, thank you so much, Ed. So, yeah, everybody can find me at TanyaMoreFitness.com, TanyaMoreFitness.com. My Instagram handle is spelled the same way, TanyaMoore, Tanya Moore. And my YouTube channel, Tanya Moore 1. Definitely, if you at least go to my website and or my Instagram handle, you'll find the links in the bio and there where you can go down the rabbit hole and find all else I'm at, too.
And you heard it from her. She is Tanya Moore. She's a fitness trainer, also educating, inspiring, motivating, and also giving us the 411 about her fight with Crohn's disease, and certainly we know that she's going to be on top of it through God's grace, and certainly she's going to definitely bounce back from this. So please check her out on social media and the various websites. Tanya, this was a lot of fun. Again, thank you so much. And if ever you want to come back on, feel free to let us know.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. God bless.
God bless you too. We'll be back with more right after this.
With our current situation, whatever that is, it can be your health and fitness goals. It could be financial. It can be relationship-wise, just things, your job, or whatever it is. Usually the change happens in a moment when we're so fed up and we're frustrated and we're like saying, like, you know what, that's it. I am fed up. I'm not living like this anymore. I'm not looking like this anymore. I am going to make a change. And that's the kind of change that happens in a moment. And sometimes maybe we go about goals and we say, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and you kind of half-step it, and you just kind of go about it light-footedly, right? You know, is that a word? Is that a term? So you don't go at it wholeheartedly, and that is because you're not fed up enough. It has not become a standard. You have to raise your standard.
Modern life is noisy. Noise is everywhere. Excessive noise is harmful, linked to sleep deprivation, hearing loss, and heart disease. Should noise be the price we pay for progress? Actually, no. Many noise sources have quieter options. Gas-powered landscaping equipment is obsolete, with battery-powered options greatly reducing noise and air pollution. Audible car alarms are obsolete, with vehicle immobilizers and GPS tracking providing silent anti-theft technologies. Quieter backup warning sounds are available, and adjustable directional sounds are less intrusive. So what can you do to reduce noise levels? Talk to store and building managers about safe sound levels. Work with elected officials and the police to strengthen noise enforcement. Join Noise Free America, a coalition to promote quiet.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. Once again, a big special thank you to Tanya Moore, professional bodybuilder, also actress, entrepreneur, personal trainer, life coach, and Crohn's disease survivor. Again, check out Tanya at her business in Southern California, Tanya Moore Fitness. Until next time, everybody, remember, put God first in everything you do, and you can't go wrong. Until next time, stick to the script. I'm out. Peace.